5-0 are the Nevada Wolfpack coming off what was a really fun game to watch over the weekend between the Wolfpack and the Aztecs, a game that was worthy of being on CBS. I mean, it was a back-and-forth game. It was a grinded-out defensive effort there in the fourth quarter. Unbelievable, really fun back-and-forth game to watch. And what a surreal feeling, too, to watch the intro, to have Brad Nessler there welcoming you to the biggest little city in the world there. Unbelievable, really, just to have that. Just to have that feel, and just to be able to see Reno and obviously the Nevada Wolfpack getting that kind of opportunity there to welcome you into what was going to be a really fun game, and it was a back and forth contest, is what you would expect between two top contenders there in the Mountain West. And, again, a little bit of a slow build for Nevada, kind of like what they had against New Mexico. But, man, when that offense catches fire, it catches fire. And that defense, both defenses, had some nice plays there in the fourth quarter and made it a grind there for the last 15 minutes. But definitely a fun game and a game worthy of being on CBS. So very, very fun there to see that game unfold. And we'll get into that here momentarily. Welcome to the show. We'll also, of course, take a look at what was a very eventful Sunday in the world of the NFL, Week 11. We'll dive into that. We'll also get you ready for Monday Night Football. And then at the end of the show, we'll give you a recap and a little bit of a reaction to the two title fights there from UFC 255 over the weekend. But let's get into it. Let's get into that Nevada game, because it was, like I said, a back-and-forth game between the Aztecs and the Wolfpack, and a game where you really missed having a sold-out crowd there. I mean, one lost team, an undefeated team, two rivals, really, in what is typically the Mountain West Western Division. Of course, no divisions in the Mountain West this year, but what is usually division rivals getting a chance to go at it in what would have been just a fired-up crowd. But Brandon Talton getting the Wolfpack on the board there, getting them on the board first with a 31-yard field goal to make it 3-0. Then, of course, San Diego State comes back. A nice scoring drive from them. Lucas Johnson capped it off that 35-yard run. Then Brandon Talton, just over 2.5 minutes to go in the first, helped cut that Nevada deficit from 4 points down to 3 points with another field goal. So 7-6 San Diego State. And again, that Nevada offense, a little slow coming out of the gate. I think the Aztecs just were playing some good defense. I didn't think Nevada was too conservative or anything like that coming out of the gate. I think both teams were trying to be a little cautious. I think just being on CBS, you don't want to go out there and lay an egg your first drive or your first play. So I think that had a little something to do with it. But I wouldn't say it was overly conservative, just a little more cautious than maybe we've seen in some start of the games, other starts of games this year. But ultimately, tight game after the first quarter. Both teams, again, sticking with each other. San Diego State there in the second quarter, at the start of the second quarter, pretty much. Another touchdown there. Lucas Johnson, 7 yards to Kobe Smith to make it 14-6 San Diego State. Then Brandon Talton, a 22-yard field goal, just under 10 minutes to go in the second quarter, brought it back to 14-9. And then Nevada retakes the lead off of a nice, quick 2-yard strike.
First and goal after the penalty at the 2 of San Diego State. 4:20 second quarter, 14-9 Aztecs. Strong for Nevada. Lofts it left in the end zone. Turner's got it. Touchdown, Nevada. The Wolfpack goes in front at 4:15 in the second quarter.
That did put Nevada back in front. The extra point made it 16-14 Nevada, but San Diego State was able to come back and cap off a drive there with just over a minute left in the first half with a Greg Bell 2-yard touchdown run. So a little back and forth action there at the end of the first half. San Diego State holding that 21-16 lead. Then again, that defense for Nevada, we've seen them make some great second half adjustments this year, and not that San Diego State was really moving the ball easily down the field, but to put up 21 points and then turn around and shut San Diego State off of the scoreboard for the entire second half, that is a great defensive turnaround for Nevada. Not the first time we've seen that this year. But Nevada keeping the Aztecs off the scoreboard there in the third quarter and really the whole second half. And then just about a little over 4 minutes in to the third quarter, what would a Nevada game be without a strong Dubs touchdown?
Strong steps up, looks long, goes long, right side, Dubs, end zone, he's got it! Touchdown, Nevada! 50 yards. Strong to Dubs. Nevada's back in front, 22-21 Pack.
And that would be the last lead change of the game. They'd go up 23-21 off Talton's extra point there. And then just over 2 minutes to go, Nevada did get a field goal to make it 26-21. And that would be the last score of the game. And then really after that, I mean, Nevada's defense had already been stepping up throughout the second half of that game. But then San Diego State's defense as well decided to get to that same level. And after that Nevada field goal that made it 26-21 Pack, there were three straight three and outs. One hit by San Diego State, then one by Nevada, then another by San Diego State. Then Nevada had a four-play drive before they punted. San Diego State then had a five-play drive before they punted. Nevada then was able to get into field goal range, but Talton, a very rare sight for that young man, missed a field goal to keep it 26-21. But then another three and out for San Diego State, then an unfortunate interception there for Nevada. Just one of those situations. I mean, it's why you do the tip ball drill if you're a defensive player. You want to make sure that when it's in that opportunity presents itself, you're there to capitalize on it. Just an unfortunate bounce there of the ball, or ricochet there of the ball that gave San Diego State the interception. But nonetheless, able to take the ball back late in the game. And then nine stressful plays later, it was a turnover on down for San Diego State. And really an odd final play because, again, it was – their star, or the quarterback that started the game for him, Lucas Johnson, who left there for a period of the game due to some injury concerns, but did come back in on that final play of the game, moving around in the pocket, was about to get hit, ended up just throwing it up there, ended up throwing it all the way out of bounds. So kind of an anticlimactic last play for San Diego State. But that whole nine-play drive was, it was fingernail chewing on type of drama there and intensity of that game. So, like I said, a game that was deserving to be on CBS in that time slot. I mean, two game opponents put on a classic game between the two of them. So Nevada now three wins in a row over San Diego State. So Nevada on a nice roll there against the Aztecs. As Nevada now 5-0 and overall and 5-0 obviously in the Mountain West Conference. San Diego State now 3-2 overall and 3-2 in the conference. Nevada three games left on their schedule: Hawaii, Fresno State, and then San Jose State. The last three games on the Nevada schedule, unless, I mean, the Pac-12 said they were opening up to some non-conference games. They were open to it, not that they were going to for sure give everybody, anybody a non-conference game, but you never know. Maybe there's another chance for something down the line. But ultimately, you know, if we can get the conference season, then I'd be happy, especially with the way Nevada's playing right now. But the Wolfpack 5-0, San Diego State 3-2, and the team they play next, Hawaii, gave Boise State quite the battle at home there on the island. Boise State on the road against Hawaii. They traded field goals to start off the game. It was 3-3 after one. Then Boise State opens it up in the second quarter with a field goal and then two touchdowns. They did have a PAT blocked, but it was 19-3 Boise State at the half. Then Hawaii able to come out with a touchdown, cut it to a 10-point game as their two-point conversion failed, make it 19-9. Then again, two touchdowns almost in the blink of an eye put up by Boise State to make it 33-9 Broncos. Hawaii did then get a touchdown, a 36-yard touchdown pass, and that two-point conversion was good. So that makes it 33-17. Then just under 4 minutes to go there in the third quarter, Boise State makes it 40-17. At that point, you're thinking it's got to be over, but Hawaii makes a solid comeback attempt. Just under 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, Calvin Turner got a 15-yard pass from Cheevan Cordero to make it 40-24. And then just under 5 minutes to go in the game, another touchdown there for Hawaii and another successful two-point conversion made it an 8-point game at 40-32. But unfortunately for Hawaii, Boise State got the ball back after that touchdown and was able to drain the last 4 minutes and 52 seconds off the clock with a 9-play drive. So Boise State able to keep it away from Hawaii, but definitely a solid fight put up there by the Rainbow Warriors at home. So Boise State now 4-1 overall, 4-0 in the Mountain West. Hawaii 2-3 overall and 2-3 in conference as well. Now going back to Friday, we also had a game in the Mountain West on Friday. Air blanked New Mexico at home. The Air Force Falcons just kind of systematically taking apart New Mexico in that game. A touchdown in the first quarter, two in the second, then one in the fourth to make it a 28-0 win for Air Force. It goes to 2-2 overall, 1-2 in the conference. New Mexico 0-4 overall and 0-4 in the conference as well. But that was the Mountain West action. Obviously, a little disappointed that San Jose State couldn't have played, because I would love, since that's Nevada's last game, I want that to be a battle of unbeatens between the two of them. So I guess they didn't have a game this week with UNLV, Colorado State, San Jose State, Fresno State, and then Utah State, Wyoming all getting canceled. So I guess in that sense, San Jose State is still undefeated. So we'll see if that is the case a few weeks from now when Nevada and San Jose State meet up for the final game of their season. But some other West Coast football going down in the Pac-12 this weekend. Chip Kelly nearly spoils Oregon in his return to Autzen. Oregon was ranked 11th, now ranked 9th. We'll get into rankings here in just a second. But Oregon capitalizing on two back-to-back fumbles there from UCLA in the first quarter to make it 14-7. But it was back and forth. And, I mean, UCLA putting pressure on Oregon throughout this game, able to cut it to a three-point game in the fourth quarter there and really put pressure on Oregon. But the Ducks survive 38-35. They go to 3-0. UCLA now 1-2. Oregon State and California had a back-and-forth contest there in the fourth quarter. A pretty entertaining fourth quarter between those two teams. Oregon State, though, able to come away with the win 31-27. So they now go to 1-2. California 0-2 on the year. Arizona had a very nice fourth quarter, but by that time, Washington had taken their foot off of the gas pedal as they had a 37-0 lead there after three quarters. And Arizona did manage to put 27 points on the board in the fourth, but still not enough as Washington got the win 44-27. Then in a matchup that's become quite an intriguing head-to-head perspective there in the Pac-12 South, the 20th-ranked USC Trojans and the Utah Utes. A pretty competitive back-and-forth first half, but then USC just using a very stout second half to get past Utah. Their defense kept the Utes off the board in the second half. USC just 9 points there in the second half, but able to come away with the win 33-17. So that was some of the action there on the West Coast between the Mountain West and the Pac-12. Looking at the top 25 as we are closing in on the first college football playoff rankings of the season. Looking at the AP top 25 poll, the top 8 stay the same. Alabama receiving all 62 first place votes there, so they stayed number 1 overall. Notre Dame at 2, Ohio State at 3, Clemson at 4. A lot of people thinking that or the popular pick, at least, is that those four teams will be the first four playoff teams in the playoff rankings. So we'll see what if that is the case. But the rest of the top 8 also staying the same. Texas A&M at 5, Florida at 6, Cincinnati at 7, and BYU at 8. Oregon moving up a couple spots to 9. Miami now moves up 2 spots as well to number 10 to round out the top 10 in the country. Northwestern, after their big win over Wisconsin, moves up 8 spots to number 11 in the country. Indiana, after nearly having a comeback of their own against Ohio State, down 42-21, able to put up 14 points in the second quarter. Nearly forced that game with Ohio State to go to overtime. But Indiana drops 3 spots due to the loss. They are now 12th in the country. Georgia stays at 13th. Oklahoma, after knocking off Oklahoma State, takes that 14th spot from the Cowboys. Iowa State now jumps up 2 spots as well to 15th. Coastal Carolina drops a spot to 16th. Marshall also drops 2 spots to 17th there. Wisconsin, after their upset loss on the road to Northwestern, drops 8 spots, number 18. USC now up to 19, Texas up to 20, Oklahoma State drops 7 spots from 14 to 21, and then Auburn, Louisiana, and Tulsa all move up 1 spot to 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, respectively. Then rounding out the new top 25 rankings is North Carolina, new to the rankings this week because they did not have a ranking last week. And then looking at other teams that received votes, this is pretty exciting for the Mountain West. I mean, Washington was the kind of the first team left out. They received 35 votes to be a part of the top 25. Liberty, which was the only team that dropped out, they dropped out from 21st, received 31 votes to stay a part of it. But Nevada also receiving a hefty amount of votes there with 23, and then SMU, Iowa, Boise State received a handful of votes, as well did San Jose State. So three teams there in the Mountain West getting some acknowledgement for possibly breaking into the top 25. So that is exciting there. And like I said, quite surreal to see Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson and that whole crew welcome us to Reno as we were getting ready for the Nevada-San Diego State game. That was pretty wild to see the CBS intro there, but I stand by it. A game worthy of being on CBS over the weekend. But that was Saturday. When we come back, we will take a look at what happened yesterday in a wild Sunday as a part of Week 11 of the NFL season. So we will do that coming up after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Well, I was hoping I was going to be able to turn it around here with the NFL season because since starting off in the first 4 or 5 weeks, picking games, being pretty going pretty well, the last few have been rough. But I had a 9-5 week in Week 10, so I was feeling good about Week 11. Then it unfolded, and who would have thought that the only game I would have gotten right there in the afternoon was the Charger game, when I had Green Bay and Miami both chosen, games I thought they were going to win. But nonetheless, a very entertaining Sunday once again. The plot thickens as we go through this NFL season, and Week 11 will be wrapped up tonight with Monday Night Football between Tampa Bay and Los Angeles, the Rams, and we will talk about that coming up in the next segment. But in my opinion, kind of the home stretch of the NFL season is weeks 12 to 16. I feel like week 17 is such a hit and miss. Some games matter for the playoffs, some matter for the draft, some might not matter at all except for just kind of pride and bragging rights. So I feel like with week 17 being kind of hit and miss with the meaning of the games, I feel like week 12 to week 16, that five-game stretch is the home stretch of the season. And now as we get ready to wrap up week 11 tonight, I think the AFC South and the NFC West are going to be the two, in terms of quality and being exciting, are going to be the two divisions to watch. The NFC East is still going to be somewhat compelling to watch because someone has to win that division still, and they're all still just awful. So that's going to be compelling just from the pure fact that those teams are so bad, yet someone has to win. But the AFC South, the battle between Indianapolis and Tennessee to see who will win the division. The NFC West, pretty much the three-horse battle right now between Seattle, the Rams, and Arizona. I think those will be because Pittsburgh's starting to pull away from Baltimore now, especially with Baltimore's loss and the news that Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins are both going to miss the Thursday night game against Pittsburgh since they're being placed on the COVID list. So Pittsburgh, I feel like, is just about ready to deliver that final knockout blow to Baltimore, and that comes this Thursday night when they meet on Thursday Night Football to cap off the Thanksgiving triple headers. So that division, I think about 5 or 6 weeks in, I thought, oh, Pittsburgh-Baltimore, this is going to be another fun division battle to watch, but Pittsburgh really starting to pull away. But I think as of right now, as we get set to kind of close out Week 11, get into Week 12, the AFC South and the NFC West, two of the better divisions to watch as we come down the stretch. But should be a lot of excitement all over the place. But let's get into the action that happened yesterday. Starting off, obviously, with the morning games, the 10 a.m. window. Cleveland and Philadelphia. Cleveland getting the win at home, 22-17. They go to 7-3 now on the year. The Eagles, 3-6-1 now on this season. But what a game for Cleveland. The first home win for the Browns. The first home win versus the Eagles for the Browns since week 7 of 1988. So that means that between home victories for Cleveland beating Philadelphia, it was a span of 11,725 days between home victories for Cleveland beating Philadelphia. The last time that happened, week 7 of the 1988 season, Cleveland beat Philadelphia 19-3. So a little more of a convincing win than they had yesterday. After I'm done asking, I'll give you about 5 seconds to just, yeah, I'm not going to hear you, obviously, but act like I will. And do you know who the head coach was of the Cleveland Browns when they beat Philadelphia back in week 7 of 1988? I'll give you 5 seconds starting now. It was Bill Belichick. The great Belichick was coaching Cleveland the last time they had beaten Philadelphia in week 7 of 1988. When they beat him 19-3. So there you go. There's a nice little factoid there. But the Browns, you know what? Not a great game played by them. I actually think Philadelphia, for as bad as they've been this year, were able to, I mean, they didn't look great, obviously. They didn't look good yesterday, but able to continue to stick it out there with Cleveland, which is why I think the 7-3 record there for the Browns, one of the more misleading records in the NFL. But when you look at that, it's pretty crazy to think that they're in second place now in the AFC North. Pittsburgh's 10-0, Cleveland's now 7-3, Baltimore is 6-4. So Cleveland is above Baltimore right now in the AFC North standings. That's impressive in terms of Cleveland. That's also really depressing if you're Baltimore. You had the season you had last year, and now you're 6-4 in third place behind the Cleveland Browns this year. Ouch. Although, I don't know why I'm talking. My team is 3-7 and can barely win a one-possession game. But we continue. So the Browns getting a solid win there at home. Then the Falcons and the Saints. Taysom Hill's debut as the starting quarterback leads the Saints to a 24-9 victory. They're now 8-2. The Falcons 3-7. But Taysom Hill, 18 of 23 for 233 yards through the air. He was sacked 3 times for 23 yards, but also the leading scorer there leading rusher for the team with 10 carries and 51 yards. He had 2 touchdowns there on the ground. And he is that kind of quarterback. He's not the guy that's going to sit there in the pocket like a Drew Brees is. But for him to throw for 233 yards, that's a decent day for him out there. And then to run for another 51 with 2 touchdowns, obviously, you know, it might not come that easy against every team. Atlanta has struggled on defense this year. Obviously, they've struggled in a lot of ways this year. But that's a confidence-boosting performance if you're New Orleans, having Taysom Hill back there at quarterback. Because last year, having him switch off between him and Bridgewater, you never really got an idea of what he could do for a whole game. Well, we've seen that, and it works. And Sean Payton knows how to get that young man some opportunities, and he takes advantage of them, does Taysom Hill. And then Michael Thomas as well continues to make history. He has the most receptions in the first 5 seasons now in NFL history. He's up to 489 catches, obviously, with 6 games left to go on their season. So more of an opportunity to enhance that record now for Michael Thomas. But a strong game there for the Saints. They pick up a win over division rivals, the Atlanta Falcons. And then Washington and Cincinnati, a game that, I mean, not overly exciting to watch, but known for a quarterback injury. Unfortunately, Joe Burrow now tears his ACL and his MCL, so he is done for the season. And, man, I don't know what it is about football games in D.C. and having quarterback leg injuries. I mean, Alex Smith there again watching another young man go down. Hopefully, it doesn't sound like obviously it's as serious as that injury to Alex Smith, but again, another quarterback leg injury there in D.C., you got to wonder if that stadium's starting to get a little bit of a curse on it. But Washington gets the win 20-9. Washington now goes to 3-7. Cincinnati 2-7-1. The Bengals 0-18-1 in their last 19 road games. The last road game that Cincinnati won was back in 2018. It was week 3 of the 2018 season. They won at Atlanta 37-36. So that's how long it's been since Cincinnati has won a road game, since week 3 of 2018, was the last time they won away from Cincinnati, and now that obviously still continues with their loss to Washington, but obviously the headliner there, Joe Burrow, done for the season for Cincinnati. And then Carolina and Detroit, the Panthers with a fantastic showing there at home, blanking the Lions 20-0. The first shutout for Carolina since week 14 of the 2015 season. Once again, to bring up the Falcons, that last shutout was against Atlanta at home. Carolina beat the Falcons 38-0. That was the last shutout win before yesterday when the Panthers beat the Lions 20-0. And not a bad day at all for Mr. P.J. Tucker, the man that before coming to Carolina was playing in the XFL before they called their season due to the pandemic. But P.J. Walker, 24 of 34, 258 yards and a touchdown, did throw two interceptions. But for the most part, I thought it was a solid game for him, you know. Obviously, little out of rhythm of sorts with some receivers throughout the game, the two turnovers. But ultimately, I thought he was doing a good job of keeping some plays alive and giving his team a chance. And obviously, you know, getting the helping lead this team to a 20-0 victory. Not a bad day at the office. So Carolina there with the win. They go to 4-7. Detroit now 4-6. Then the Steelers and Jaguars, you know, Pittsburgh saying they weren't taking Jacksonville lightly, and they played like it. Jacksonville still put up, for the most part, you know, I thought a pretty good game against Pittsburgh. The Steelers, though, able to get the 27-3 win over Jacksonville. The Steelers now 10-0 for the first time in franchise history. For how great that team is, obviously for how much success they've had, I mean, obviously it's not easy to get to 10-0. It's a very difficult thing. I mean, to go undefeated for more than 6 or 7 games in the NFL is just a tough ask because of how tough the competition is. But for Pittsburgh to be 10-0 for the first time in franchise history, that's pretty impressive. And again, this is a team that obviously with Ben Roethlisberger there and Chase Claypool emerging, but really just feels like there's not one kind of standout. It's been a team effort on both sides of the ball, and if they keep going, I mean, watch out for the Steelers. They are starting to pull away there from the AFC North, although we'll see if Cleveland can catch them. God, that feels weird to say. And then Titans and Ravens, the rematch of the AFC playoff game last year in Baltimore. Some tense moments before the game when Tennessee had some kind of player meeting or whatever they were doing there. They had some kind of a big team huddle there at midfield. And then as they broke that huddle, a handful of the Tennessee players started to wander towards the Baltimore sideline before Harbaugh got between them and kind of pushed them away. But Tennessee trying to play some mind games there. And another tough day for that Ravens offense. Lamar Jackson, just 17 of 29 for 186 yards through the air. Did have a touchdown, but also had an interception as well. Meanwhile, Ryan Tannehill, 22 of 31 for 259 yards, threw two touchdowns, also had an interception. But Derrick Henry, 28 carries, 133 yards, and the big man with the walk-off touchdown in overtime. 29 yards. Just a dominant run from Henry as he was able to follow his blockers, cut back out to the outside to the right, finish off the game there for Tennessee. So that's two straight wins for the Titans over the Ravens there in Baltimore, as Tennessee now goes to 7-3, the Ravens to 6-4. Then Patriots and the Titans, they wrapped up the morning game session there. Houston with a 27-20 win. New England, again, Cam Newton. I mean, he looked okay. It didn't necessarily look like he was sluggish, just Houston doing a good job of putting pressure on him and not giving him too much time to operate there in the pocket. But Houston gets the win 27-20. They go to 3-7. Patriots now 4-6. And for New England, it's the first time below 500 through 10 games since the 2000 season. And back then, that was before the NFL expansion and realignment with the divisions. So they finished 5th in the AFC East, which was last place. The Miami Dolphins that year were division champions at 11-5. The Indianapolis Colts were playing in the division at the time. They went 10-6. Both of those teams made the playoffs. But the Jets finished 9-7. The Bills finished 8-8. And in that 2000 season, the Patriots finished 5-11. Of course, they were only 2-8 through 10 games that season. So a little bit better position this year than they were back in 2000, but still quite a different feel to the Patriots that they've had for the two decades in between those seasons. Quite a different feel for New England, but the Texans getting a nice win there at home. The first time they've beaten a team that is not Jacksonville this year, so that's got to feel good for Houston, getting the 27-20 victory there at home. Then we get to the afternoon games, the Chargers and the Jets. The Chargers able to hold off the Jets there, winning 34-28. And while I am happy the Chargers finally got a win, I mean, of their seven games this year, nine have come down to one possession. They've lost, obviously, seven of those nine, won two others, that being the week one game against Cincinnati, and obviously the game yesterday winning by six over the Jets. The only game this year that hasn't been a one-possession game was the Chargers' 39-29 win over Jacksonville at home. But you know what? They're able to close out a one-possession game. I'll take it. It's another great performance from Justin Herbert. Keenan Allen as well, as 16 receptions, a franchise record for a single game there by a receiver. He keeps producing since he's gotten to the Chargers, so happy to see that. Would have liked to have seen a little bit of a better day from the defense of the Chargers, seeing as how the Jets' 28 points scored there ties for the high the Jets have scored this year. They've scored 28 points twice and then a 27-point performance as well. The other time the Jets scored 28 was against the Broncos, so they enjoy scoring there against AFC West teams. But nonetheless, Chargers get the win. I'll take it. And they move to 3-7. The Jets still winless at 0-10. Then speaking of the Broncos, they met Miami at home, and Denver gets the 20-13 win. Tua looked like he left the game initially due to an injury, but then, of course, they held him out of the game. He looked like he was, he stayed there on the sideline, didn't have his helmet on or anything, but stayed there on the sideline, so maybe they could have put him back in, but they stuck with Fitzpatrick. But it seems as though Brian Flores is very determined to have Tua back in there as the starter as they move forward. But nonetheless, the Broncos get the win 20-13. Denver now 4-6. Miami 6-4. Denver 3-0 against AFC East teams this year. They beat the Jets 37-28. They beat New England 18-12. And a 20-13 victory over Miami yesterday. And they will play Buffalo in their penultimate game of the regular season. At least as it stands now, it is their penultimate game of the regular season there in week 16. So we'll see if they can sweep the AFC East this year. But still, Denver with a very nice performance there at home. Like I said, 3-0 against the AFC East, but just 1-6 this year against all other teams. But they are 4-6 overall, Miami dropping to 6-4. Then Green Bay and Indianapolis, a really fun game between the two teams. Can't say much besides Indianapolis just fighting it out there with Green Bay after holding pace there early on in the game. Obviously then falling back there in the middle in the second quarter when they were down 28-14, but they scratched and clawed their way back to actually take the lead 31-28 before Mason Crosby was able to tie it up with a field goal, a 26-yard field goal there towards the end of regulation. But then a fumble for Green Bay leads to the game-winning field goal for Indianapolis. So hats off to the Colts. Great victory for them. Both teams now 7-3 as Blankenship there for Indianapolis got the game-winning 39-yard field goal there in overtime. And the final day game, the Cowboys and the Vikings. The Dallas able to get a feel-good road win with the return of Andy Dalton. Cowboys 31-28, the victors. They go to 3-7, Minnesota to 4-6. And just shows you never know what kind of Vikings team is going to show up. You can say that about a handful of teams this year in the NFL. But the Vikings falling short there. Had the 28-24 lead right around, the two-minute mark. And then as we get close to about a minute 37 to go, Schultz there for Dallas catches the go-ahead two-yard touchdown. So Dallas able to get a late score, and their defense holds up as well. Take the win 31-28. And then last night, Kansas City and Las Vegas. A really, really fun back-and-forth game, but you had to think that Kansas City was going to be out for revenge, but Vegas made them work for it all the way to the end, made them work for it, but Kansas City did get the 35-31 win. The Chiefs now 9-1, the Raiders 6-4, and the Chiefs, While the Raiders were undefeated in the division coming into the game last night, the Chiefs have dominated the AFC West since 2015. Because since that season, Kansas City is 30-4 against the AFC West. Those four losses came in week two of 2015. They lost to Denver 31-24. Then they swept the AFC West in 2016. They lost in week seven of the 2017 season to the then Oakland Raiders, 31-30. Then in 2018, week 15, the Chargers were able to get a win over the Chiefs, 29-28. And then, of course, week five of this season, the Raiders able to beat the Chiefs 40-32 there at Arrowhead. So Kansas City has had some hiccups here and there, but for the most part, dominated the AFC West, and they keep that one loss this season. They are 9-1 now on the year. But a very fun day of NFL. Obviously, it's been that way all season. Some fun games, some close games. Obviously, an overtime game there between the Packers and the Colts. Unfortunate to lose Joe Burrow there in the Cincinnati game. But nonetheless, it was an exciting Sunday for Week 11 of the NFL. When we come back, Week 11 caps off with the Monday night matchup between the Rams and the Buccaneers. So we'll take a look at that on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Week 11 of the NFL season is closed out by the Monday night matchup tonight. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers at 7-3 hosting the 6-3 LA Rams. The last time these two teams faced off was September 29th of last year, and it was an offensive explosion of a game with the Buccaneers beating the Rams in Los Angeles 55-40. I do not think we're going to see the same kind of offensive production in the game tonight. One, because, I mean, both offenses are good, but I wouldn't say in terms of some of the explosive offensives we've seen this year, they're not up towards the top. I mean, the Rams only averaging 24 points per game this season. Only Philadelphia is averaging fewer points per game in terms of teams that are currently in a playoff position there in the NFC. So you look at that, and you also look at the way the defenses have just been superb, really, this year. I mean, the Rams have allowed fewer than 25 points in 7 of their 9 games this season, which is tied for third most in the NFL. And the Buccaneers, according to Next Gen Stats, has 120 quarterback pressures this season, which is second most in the NFL, and Jared Goff has a 37.1 passer rating under pressure. So I think with the way both of these defenses are coming into this game, we are not going to see a 55-40 type of score like we saw the last two teams were on last time these two teams were on the field together. I'll get it right here. But I still think it should be an interesting game because you have, again, it's a rematch of sorts, right? When the Patriots and the Rams played each other in the Super Bowl a few years back, and it was Brady versus Goff. It's Brady versus Goff again. And obviously this is Brady in a different system, but I also think this is Goff in a little bit of a different place in his career. You know, the success of the team has really fluctuated over the last couple seasons, but I feel like in terms of a quarterback that has been stable, you know, he hasn't gone on these crazy interception sprees, or he hasn't, you know, been throwing away games right and left and all this. I mean, he's been a relatively consistent quarterback in that he's been able to be there for the Rams for most of the season, for the most of the time that he's been there with LA. They've always had their faith in him, and I think he and Sean McVay are really on a good page, and they seem to have gotten back into a rhythm this year they didn't have last year. And with the Rams being 6-3, they got to feel good about themselves. And what has been a very difficult division this year in the NFC West, they have held their own, obviously getting the win over Seattle a couple weeks ago. I think it was actually last week, being able to do that. So they've been able to really keep pace with what has been a difficult NFC West division. And now going on the road, they've made some long trips to the East Coast already this year. I mean, you look at their schedule, they were at Philadelphia this year. They were at Buffalo this year. They were at Washington this year. They were at Miami. So they've made some trips to the East Coast. The thing is, they did beat the Eagles, but they lost the Bills. They were able to beat Washington, but then they lost the Dolphins. So they're 2-2 in terms of these games on the East Coast. So I think having that experience already, having four such trips of that nature, that'll help them be ready for the lights and be ready to adapt to, again, another East Coast game there for the Rams. And for Tampa Bay, I would say avoid the deep pass, because Tom Brady has not been good on deep passes this year. In passes of 20 or more yards, he is 3 for 30. And in fact, all three deep completions came in one game, and that was week 7 against the Raiders. Sorry to throw that out there. That's just a stat. Not that I search that one out, but I do have a little bit of joy reading it out. But I think for Tampa Bay, I mean, I think it's going to be mostly a defensive game tonight. And if Tampa Bay can, I mean, I think if both teams, the more diverse they can be, the better it will be for them. So, and what I'm saying essentially is the more balanced they can be, the more they'll be able to keep these defenses on their toes. Because I think if you get into, obviously, with the two quarterbacks you have, you want to let them throw the ball. You want to let them sling it all over the field. But I think both these defenses, I mean, Tampa Bay's defense still was something to prove after that shellacking New Orleans gave them. They're going to have something to prove for the rest of this year. So I think they're going to be motivated to step up. And then Aaron Donald, not that he necessarily needs a whole lot more of motivation, being one of the best defensive ends in football. But interestingly enough, Tom Brady is the only quarterback Aaron Donald has faced multiple times and has failed to register a sack or a win in a game against him, and that includes the playoffs. So Aaron Donald has yet to be on a Rams team that has beaten Tom Brady and has yet to play a game against Brady where he has sacked him. So I think the Rams looking to hang with Seattle there in the NFC West and put a little pressure on Arizona to keep up with them. I think they're looking to get a big win here on the road, and it could be sparked by an Aaron Donald performance. If he gets into the backfield, he's able to get pressure on Brady, sack him, and give that defense some big momentum plays. Not that he doesn't do that already, but with that history now against Brady, if he can overcome that tonight in this game, get some big plays, maybe a sack or two, I think that'll help the Rams and put this game, the momentum, a little bit more in their favor, especially if it's later on in the game. But I think it's going to come down to defense and pressure on the quarterback. I think that's what it's going to be in this game. I don't expect it to be high scoring. I am picking Tampa Bay to win. I just think with the Rams having another trip to the East Coast, again, saying they're 2-2, and this being a tough place to play, really, and a tough team this year. I mean, Tampa Bay 7-3, but two of those losses were against a really good New Orleans Saints team that had Drew Brees out there. So I think this is a Tampa Bay team that's looking to take advantage and put themselves in a great position to fight against New Orleans for that division and possibly for a nice playoff seed there. So I think Tampa Bay gets the win over Los Angeles. I think it's going to be a tight game tonight, but I think Tampa Bay does get the win. And we will talk about that game tomorrow on the Spencer Wilson Show, but we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will take a look at UFC 255 from over the weekend. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. UFC 255 over the weekend. It was a fun show. Before we get to the title fights, just let you know what happened on the card. Started off with a 3-fight early preliminary card in the welterweight division. Sasha Palatnikov defeated Luis Cosi by TKO in the third round. That was the fight of the night. So a major fight coming out there to start off the show. But those two put on a heck of a show. As I said, Palatnikov got the third round TKO. Then Kyle Daukaus and Alan Yobin each got unanimous decision victories in middleweight and welterweight respectively. Then we move to the preliminary card. Nicholas Dalby defeated Daniel Rodriguez by unanimous decision in the welterweight class. And then Antonia Shevchenko, the women's flyweight champion's sister, herself got a TKO finish in her fight with under 30 seconds to go in round two. And she received one of the two performance of the night bonuses. So not a bad night for the Shevchenko family. One daughter retains her belt. The other gets a nice fight bonus for having one of the performances of the night. The other performance of the night went to Joaquin Buckley, who defeated Jordan Wright by second round knockout 18 seconds into the second round in the middleweight division. Then the preliminary card was headlined in the flyweight division when Brandon Moreno defeated Brandon Royval by first round TKO with a second left on the clock. Then we get to the main card. Paul Craig defeated Mauricio Rua by TKO in the second round. Then Katlyn Chookagian defeated Cynthia Calvillo by unanimous decision. Tim Means also defeated Mike Perry by unanimous decision. Then we got to the title fights. Valentina Shevchenko defeated Jennifer Maia by unanimous decision, but Maia was a game challenger. It was no doubt one round apiece after the first two rounds as Maia, I mean, for the most I've ever seen someone beat up on Shevchenko in a five-minute round, Maia did it there in round two. A great performance there, but Shevchenko then dominated the next three rounds, won by unanimous decision, 49-46 across the board. Then in the final fight, the main event, Deivison Figueiredo defeated Alex Perez by a first-round submission via the guillotine choke, just under 2 minutes. A great performance from Figueiredo. He was able to just dictate the pace, got himself in a great position, able to use that quickness that you see a lot from those lighter fighters and work his way into a solid submission choke. So a great night of fights, a lot of fun to see both those titles on the line, and both titles stay with their respective fighter. We will talk about MLS and Monday Night Football tomorrow. Peace!